This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM, this is Soul to Soul on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Chayesorah, Tov Shin Pei Vav. A very, very warm welcome to all of our radio family to another opportunity. Baruch Hashem, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, another beautiful, beautiful Shabbos coming after another challenging, difficult, satisfying, whatever week it was. Shabbos Kodesh is always a very, very welcome guest in our home, and we welcome you all to the show today. Thank you so, so much for joining us. As always, the show is brought to you as a Shfu Shlema for certain Cholim, for Baruch Ben Elezel Rochel, for Shaina Rochel Bas Leia, Daniela Bas Nechama, Shlomit Bas Devora, Mor Bat Esther, Ariel Ben Shaina Leia, Yosef Gershon Ben Taiba, Avlom Yankov Ben Stern Sora, Besoich Shor Cholim Yisrael, amongst all those who have some kind of a challenge and need a special bit of siyata d'shmaya, need a little bit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's caress to get through a crisis, to get through a problem, to sort of overcome some kind of challenge. Bez Hashem, in the schus of the Torah we're going to learn today, and in the schus of the beautiful, beautiful observance of Shabbos Kodesh, last week was so incredibly inspiring, the Shabbos Project and all the devotion, all those who signed on and turned off their devices and devoted themselves to one beautiful, beautiful Shabbos. And we ask, let's just do one more Shabbos. Let's do this week also, and maybe next week. Baruch Hashem, let's make Shabbos such a beautiful, beautiful part of our lives. So I want to do something today that I don't think I've ever done in a radio program. And it's been a few years. We never talk about marriage. It's a sensitive topic, but because, of course, this week is Parshas Chayesorah, and in this Parsha, of course, it's so much about weddings, about shidduchim. So it's worthwhile examining the tefillah that was offered by Avram's servant Eliezer to Hashem. And as we say, he requested that he succeed in finding a suitable mate for Yitzchak by subjecting her to a unique test of chesed. As the Torah says in Bereishis Perek Chof Dalet, Pasuk Yud Beis, says, Vayomer Hashem Lokei Adonai Avram, Hashem the God of my master Avram, Hakrei No Lefonai Hayom, arrange it for me today, Vase Chesed Im Adonai Avram, and do kindness with my master Avram. I'm going to stand here by the well of water, and all the daughters of the city are going to come and draw water. And the girl who I say to her, please, let me a bit, tip over your jug so I can drink. And she says, drink the gam gamale chashke, and I'll give you a camel's to drink also. This is the one who is proven to be the one that for Yitzchak, and through that, through her, I will know that you have done kindness with my master. That was the tefillah that Yitzchak Avinu, that Eliezer set up. And the Chasam Sefer explains in Teres Moshe, on this week's Pasha, why Eliezer chose this particular sign. For only a maiden possessing the degree of Chesed would be a mate worthy of Yitzchak. And he writes as follows, but you're going to have to wait a minute to find out. We're going to take a short break, and we'll come back, and we're going to discuss the amazing words of the Chasam Sofer, which will shed so much light for us. This is 101.9 Chai FM, the program of Soul to Soul. Please stay with us. We're just getting started.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Parshas Chaye Sarah Tov Shin Kei Vav. As we prepare for another amazing, amazing Shabbos. Shabbos, right after the Shabbos, last week of the Shabbos Project, with the energy, Bezer Hashem, of the Shabbos that will keep us going, that will commit us and kind of inspire us to keep Shabbos, not just the 1 week, but every week, Bezer Hashem. As we always do at this time, just to give you the important details and times you need to know for this coming Shabbos. So first of all, the earliest time to light your Shabbos candles this afternoon is at 10 minutes past 5. 5:10 is the earliest time to light your Shabbos candles, and do it. It's already plenty of time. It's still more than 2 hours from now. Get the house ready. Get yourselves ready. Get the food on the hot tray and simmer down. Light the candles and just sit down and really, really allow yourself to totally relax and let the spirit of Shabbos completely overwhelm you and kind of be full of it. Take a good book, take a chumash, take something Jewish and read it. Spend time with your kids. Make it an amazing, amazing experience for yourself. If you can't manage 10 past 5, then do half past 5, quarter to 6, 6 o'clock, whatever it is. Earlier than the deadline is always great. As I said, we have this mitzvah anyway of adding on to the Shabbos on the weekday. Let's hop around. Let's grab an opportunity to do that. The latest time for lighting Shabbos candles today is 6:16, although, as we said, we begin the part of the year now where many communities have taken upon themselves the standard beginning of Shabbos time for some, which is quarter past 6:15. Doesn't really make that much of a difference today. It's one minute difference, and that is the absolute deadline for a person to light candles. Yes, if there's an emergency, you can do it late. You can still do things later, but that only is really in a case of an emergency. Otherwise, we regard 6:15 or 6:16 as the absolute latest time for doing any kind of malacha as Shabbos comes in. Shkia is at 6:34, just before 6:34. That is the absolute deadline, even if you're really, really in a crucial situation. We don't do any melacha after that. And therefore, if you want to make sure that you are davening Ma'ariv at night, all you have to do is wait until 6:52. 6:52 is the earliest time we consider proper night, and you can then daven Ma'ariv and say the full Kriyat Shema, fulfill the Torah mitzvah of saying Kriyat Shema in its right time. And then you sit down for a beautiful, beautiful meal with the family, with friends. Make it a beautiful, beautiful experience. Study some Torah together. Talk about the week. Talk about things that inspired you during the week. Make it a really, really special, special occasion. Tomorrow, we lay in Parshat Chaye Sarah. Beautiful Parsha about the death of Sarah, and then about the acquisition of a wife for Yitzchak, the son of Avram. And the Haftarah speaks about the end of the reign of David HaMelech, and how Adonio tries to usurp the kingdom, and David has to reaffirm once again that Shlomo is going to be the next king. This week is also Shabbos Mevorchim. We're going to usher in the month of Chodesh Kislev. Actual Rosh Chodesh will be on Thursday night and Friday, as we're getting ever so closer to the holiday of Hanukkah. So whatever your shul does on a Shabbos Mevorchim, a special shira, a special chong, whatever it might be, get involved, get stuck in. Don't be someone who sits on the side and just complains, but actually participate, be involved in whatever is going on in the shul. The afternoon continues. Shabbos is getting, Baruch Hashem, longer and longer. The Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 7:08. 8 minutes past 7 is the end of Shabbos, so plenty of time to have a great afternoon, great meal, maybe a bit of a shlof, and time for some Torah, time for some learning, time for some serious study, especially, you know, some of us don't have enough time during the week to learn. Make the opportunity on Shabbos. I want to speak today a little bit about something that isn't necessarily relevant to us, but it's an important thing to understand, and that is the whole concept of electricity. We're talking about electricity. Electricity that's actually supplied on and produced on Shabbos itself, which of course here is not an issue because it's all controlled by non-Jews, but in Eretz Yisrael. So of course power supply is a vital need, right? For obviously on the whole week, including Shabbos. And of course, any interruption or any kind of impairment of the supply, of course, can even endanger human life. Hospitals are full of devices that depend on the supply of power, and even private homes. There are people who are dangerously ill, who rely on electrical devices to actually stay alive. Police officers and the security forces use electrical equipment. And without electricity, they would be unable to respond properly to any kind of emergency. If it's winter, on cold days, so many homes are heated using electricity. If electricity were to be sort of withheld on Shabbos, I know babies and sick people would likely be at risk. Very hot days can also pose, I can't say, a certain risk for those who are ill and require air conditioning. In addition, since nowadays we store foods for an extended period of time in fridges and freezers, right? The food may actually go off. We know about this very, very well. We've had something called load shedding. We know all about electricity going off and the suffering and the hardship and the complications it brings. So in a large population, so it could even chas v'shalom cause food poisoning, which can be life threatening. So the question is, in a situation where it's necessary for the, let's say, particularly in Israel, the Israeli electric company, right, whose employees are mostly Yidden, to supply electricity non-stop, even on Shabbos. If there is some kind of impairment to the supply of electricity in a sort of particular location, whatever is needed to fix it must be done. Since technicians may fix the grid on Shabbos, everyone may benefit from the electricity that is subsequently generated, even though it was restored on Shabbos. The only exception is if there's a power outage takes place in a small area where it's known, let's say for certain, that there's no risk to human life involved, in which case the repair may not be done on Shabbos. Right? If it was, nevertheless, repaired by Jews on Shabbos, one may not actually benefit from the electricity until an hour after Shabbos. And that's from our Shlomo Zalman Orbach, which the Shemir Shabbos Gilchosa actually quotes it. However, the problem becomes that it's known that certain employees perform and do things on Shabbos that are not essential for sort of generating the electricity supply, but that are for the purpose of saving money. Furthermore, if there were greater awareness of Shabbos observance, it would be possible to sort of automate the entire electricity generating system and eliminate the need for human intervention at all without sort of extra expense. It would only be necessary to have a few workers in the power station monitoring the system and obviously troubleshooting a kind of emergencies. However, since in fact the electric company does not try to avoid performing melacha on Shabbos, so several of the leading rabbanim ruled that one really should not use its electricity on Shabbos, but rather use a local generator to avoid benefiting from people who are chasram b'machal Shabbos, desecrating Shabbos, or supporting it in any way. This was clearly the opinion of the Chazon Ish. We'll be back in a moment with a few closing comments. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul, and this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
There are 39 milachot which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Soul to Soul, back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kiddush, Parshas Chayesora, Tov, Shin, Pei. Well, we just asked a big question. Rivka arrives with Eliezer back in Eretz Yisrael, and they see this man walking, happens to be Yitzchak, and Rivka inquires, who is this man? And the obvious question is, you know, if we know Rivka to be a very, very modest, very sneezed girl, what's she doing asking about man, about a man? This is the question that the Belzer Rebbe, the Sar Shulam, asks. And he answers difficulty based on a well-known fact that Yitzchak's midah is gevura, severity, referred to as the sort of pachad Yitzchak, the dread of Yitzchak, right? It was necessary for Yitzchak to wait for his appropriate mate until Rivka was born, so that she would be able to soften the severity of his gevura with her chesed. Understanding this, Eliezer sought an irrefutable sign indicating that she was suitable for Yitzchak. Therefore, upon seeing Yitzchak for the first time, she was struck by his gevura. Vatipo me'al hagomo. Literally, she fell from the camel, for she became intensely fearful that this gevura would overwhelm her chesed. And this prompted her to actually ask, who is that man walking in the field towards us? In other words, who is this man approaching me whose midah of gevura is so intense that he stands in opposition to my midah of chesed? Eliezer replied, Hu Adoni, he is my master. He is the master of gevura. He has chosen to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with this midah. Therefore, to mitigate his inherent midah of din, so Vatika Chatzaif, she took the veil, Vatiskatos, and she covered herself. The word meaning the veil, Chatzaif, possesses the same numerical value as the word Rina, meaning song of joy. She prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that when Yisrael would be in Golus, they would soften the impact of the din by pouring out their song of joy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, the Gemara in Sukkah Yudalit explains this phenomenon as follows. It says, why is it that the prayers of tzaddikim are compared to a pitchfork? Says, just as a pitchfork turns over the grain and tosses it from one place to another, so too the tefillahs, the prayers of tzaddikim, turn over the attributes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the attributes of anger to the attributes of mercy. This explanation is actually also brought down in the name of the great Rav Tzvi of Liska, the author of Ach Pri Tevua. However, he interprets this pasuk in a slightly different manner. Right? He sees the words Tzaif, Vel, as an acronym for Amcha Yisrael Tzarichin Parnasa. Right? Your people Israel require a source of income. Consequently, Vatiskos implies that she covered up all of her transgressions in keeping with the teaching in the Gemara, on Erevin, that exile and poverty alter a person's judgment and cause them to chas v'shalom violate the will of Hashem. So perhaps we have an amazing idea. We've learned a very important concept from the teaching of the Chasam Sefer, whose source we said is the Zohar HaKadosh. Kadosh Baruch Hu chose to create a female companion for man whose nature would conflict with his own. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the woman, he proclaims, Es Eloi Ezer Kenegda, I'm going to make for him an adversarial helper. Now we find a fascinating account in the Gemara, the Gemara in Yevamos on page 63, concerning the Midas of Rabbi Chiya. Even though his wife caused him much grief, he brought her presence on a regular basis. The Gemara says, Rabbi Chiya's wife would aggravate him constantly. When he found an object that suited her, he would wrap it up in a piece of cloth and bring it to her as a sign of affection. Rav said to him, but she causes the master so much grief. Why do you bring her gifts? He replied, it is enough that they raise our children and save us from sin. Rashi explains that they prevent us from having improper thoughts. Simply understood, we can suggest that Rav Chiya intended to teach Rav a very important lesson concerning the Midah of Hakaras HaTov, recognizing and appreciating the favors others perform on our behalf. The concept of Hakaras HaTov, of gratitude, does not apply only when the benefactor does us no harm. Even if the person doing something nice for us also causes us distress, it's still incumbent upon us to express our gratitude for the good. Therefore, even though Rav Chiya's wife caused him grief, he brought her presence whenever possible in order to express his gratitude. As he explains, it's enough that they raise our children and save us from sin. However, maybe you can go and give a clear-cut proof from this to the correct way to behave from the following pasuk. Pasuk in Devarim says, Lois sa'ev mitzri ki gera yisabatzai. Do not despise any of the Egyptians because you were a stranger in his land. Rashi comments, even though they cast your males into the river, what is the reason? Because they were your hosts at a time of pressing needs. So we have a sort of a convincing proof that although the Egyptians, right, murdered Jewish children, nevertheless, we have to show them gratitude for hosting us. Rabbi Chiya deduced from this that he was still obligated to express gratitude to his wife, despite the fact that she caused him so much grief. But perhaps we can perhaps explain a maybe a little deeper significance of what Rabbi Chiya's exemplary behavior based on a fundamental principle regarding the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we learn from Rav Elimelech of Luzinsk. He says as follows, man was created solely to overcome his natural tendencies. Therefore, he should compel himself at the age of 18 specifically to correct his midas, to correct all negative character traits and to break bad habits. In order to do that, one has to act in direct opposition to a particular trait for 40 consecutive days. This applies to stubbornness, laziness, or even lack of diligence in one's Torah study. From then on, he'll receive Siyata Dishmaya, he'll receive divine assistance to complete this task until all of his negative tendencies are eliminated. We find a source for this idea also in the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, right? We know the founder of Chassidus, quoting Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon. And he says this notion is presented in the Sefer Baal Shem Tov, in Bereishis, in the name of his student, right? The author of Todlus Yaakov Yosef, in the Sefer Tzofnas Paneach. And he says, I have heard from my teacher of blessed memory, in the name of Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon, that the main reason for the creation of man in Olam Hazeh is to break his natural bad tendencies. Similarly, the great, the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, right, writes explicitly and quite compellingly in his commentary on Mishlei in chapter 4, Pasuk 14, it says that the reason a person is alive is to break the tendencies he has failed to break until now. Therefore, one must always try to improve oneself. If he does not make an effort to improve himself, what is the purpose of his life? Similar fashion, he writes elsewhere in Perek Dalet Pasuk Chavav. He says, so long as one's midas are not perfected, even those that were part of his nature from birth, nothing are not secure. Because character traits resemble a strand of pearls. If a knot is tied at the end of the strand, then they are all secured. If not, they are all lost. The reason correcting oneself's midas is so important, so much so that it was for this purpose that man was created. So we can explain that based on what Rav Chaim Vital, what he says in his Sefer, Shaarei Kedusha, right? In the name of his Rebbe D'Arizal. He says, tikkun of one's midas, fixing of one's midas, such as not getting angry or not being arrogant, is not discussed along with the other mitzvahs in the Torah. Even though Achazal compares some of these shortcomings to literally worshiping Avodah Zarah, worshiping idols. He explains that the reason they are not discussed in the Torah is because they are the source and preparation necessary for the fulfillment of the mitzvahs. A person with negative character traits cannot possibly fulfill the mitzvahs. Accordingly, tikkun of all our midas supersedes all of the other mitzvahs sort of outlined in the Torah. So now we can understand why man was created for the sole purpose of breaking bad habits and correcting bad midas. as you have learnt, the mitzvahs of the Torah are meaningless and useless if a person does not correct his character traits, his midas, that are sort of innate to his very, very, animalistic being. Without accomplishing a tikkun of one's midas, the intelligent soul imparted to us from Kodesh Baruch Hu above cannot fulfill any mitzvah in actual deeds. Now, it's sort of universally accepted that it is the parents' obligation to educate their children to follow in the ways of the Torah and to have proper respect and reverence. In fact, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, Shema bini musar avicha v'alti toish Torah simecha. Hear, my son, the morals of your father, and do not abandon the teachings of your mother. A child who fails to heed his parents can ultimately fall into the category of chas v'shalom, ki yeh le'ish ben soirer moireh. You can become chas v'shalom a wayward and rebellious son who doesn't listen to the words of the parents. So it should be quite clear from this discussion that the subject of tikkun hamidas stands at the top of the list of things that parents are obligated to teach their children. For without good midas, there's no sense in teaching a child Torah and mitzvahs, seeing as they will not be able to perform them properly. Thus, it should be quite evident that it is crucial that a parent first attends to the tikkun of his or her own poor midas, and if they fail to correct their own poor midas, how can they hope to teach their children how to improve their midas? To emphasize this point, let's quote the words of the Gemara Nida, that says, if Rebbe did not teach it, from where does Rav Chiya know it? How can the children know what to do if it's not for the parents teaching them? This provides us with a very, very nice explanation of Rabbi Melech of Luzinsk teaching that we said above. Man was only created in order to overcome his natural tendencies. Therefore, he should urge himself to correct his midas at the age of 18 specifically. We should endeavor to explain what is so special about the age of 18, according to what we have learned, so we can explain what it means based on what we learned in Mishnah in Avos, that an 18-year-old is ready for marriage. Now, the purpose of marriage is to produce children and to raise them to observe the Torah. Therefore, he should urge himself to correct his midas at the age of 18 specifically so that he enters marriage with perfect midas. By doing so, he will be well equipped to guide his children with regards to the tikkun of their midas. We should therefore now sort of gain some insight into the sort of the intricacy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans. He created women with character traits and qualities that oppose her husband's making her an Ezer Kenegda. Thus, two parents will be forced to overcome the differences in their midas in order to live together in harmony with shalom bayis. They will learn to modify their midas and give in to one another. By doing so, they will set living examples for their children, and their children will learn how to overcome the conflicting midas that are ingrained within them. And this is perhaps what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Lo toiv heyos adam levadai. It's not good that man should be alone. In other words, it is not good for man to live alone with his midas rooted within him. As such, he will not be able to be a good example for his children and will not be able to properly teach them how to correct their midas. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided Eser Le'ezer Kenegdoi to create a mate for man that will be both Ezer, a helper, and Kenegdoi, possess the opposite conflicting traits that would then force them to overcome their differences and serve as really good examples for their children to learn from. Rav Chia was wise enough to realize and to understand that this was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's divine plan. He arranged for Rav Chia to have such a difficult wife so that he would work on improving his midas, his character traits, right? He learned to concede to her and not stand sort of on ceremony and not get angry at her. In this manner, his children learned from him how to correct their midas and therefore better serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With this understanding, we can now better appreciate the deeper significance of Rav Chia's response to Rav. When asked why he continued to buy gifts for a woman who caused him such grief, he replied, "It's enough that they raise our children. Let's sort of have an interpretation based on what we're discussing." He was informing Rav that indeed she mamish caused him so much aggravation, but this compelled him to forego his sort of own honor, his own covet, and buy her gifts anyway. By doing so, he was teaching his children a valuable lesson concerning midas. They saw the importance of passing on one's covets and yielding for the sake of Shalom Bayis. So indirectly, his wife was raising their children to have good midas. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Chaye Sora Tov Shin Pei Vov. And we are about to talk a little bit about marriage. We're going to explain now the words of the Chasam Sefer, why it was that Eliezer specifically tested the potential wife of a Yitzchak of Yinu with these incredible tests of volunteering to do kindness, to give him to drink, and also the camels. He says as follows. He says on the words that this will be a proof that she was the one that you have chosen. Rashi explains that she's worthy of Yitzchak because she will perform acts of chesed. And we can provide an explanation based on what the commentaries explain regarding the pasuk that Eser loy ezer kenegdoi, I will make for him, for Adam Arishon, an adversarial helper. Now, if the woman's nature contrasts with the man's nature, in this manner she will be his helper. For it is not good for them to both be lenient and or extravagant. Now Avram, who embodied the very, very midah, the attribute of chesed, was balanced by Sarah, who was stingy with guests. Yitzchak, who embodied the very midah of din, strict justice, would be benefited by a wife whose midah was chesed, tending to perform acts of good favor. Therefore, he says, for your servant, for Yitzchak. She'll be this great balas chesed, this great woman, Rivka does much chesed, will be the perfect wife, the perfect balance for Yitzchak. So the Chasam Sofer explains why it's essential that a husband and wife possess actually contrasting and even opposite character traits. It is not good for them to both be lenient or both be sort of spendthrifts. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created women to be adversarial, ezer kineder, on purpose, so that she would help her husband by representing a contrasting point of view. Sarah, right, Imenu, is proof of this fact. She, of course, embodied the attribute of Din, opposing Avram's attribute of chesed, of kindness. It was her midah of strict justice of Din that saved Yitzchak from being corrupted by Ishmael. As in fact, we learned in last week's Pasha, she said to Avram, Goresh ha'omazos v'espino, chase away, right? Drive out this slave woman and her son. Why? Because the son of this slave woman shall not inherit in Bini im Yitzchak, with my son, with Yitzchak. We find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu concurred with Sarah. As it's written, she says to Hashem says to Avram, Al yela beinecho lanar v'ala masecha. Right? Don't be distressed over this child and over your slave woman. Right? Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her voice. Why? Why must you hear her voice? Because similar fashion, Rivka softened the din of Yitzchak with her midah of chesed. She was truly his ezer kineder. And we find a sort of clear-cut source for the Chasam Sofer's idea in the Zayir HaKadosh, in next week's Parsha. It says that Yitzchak represents the strict, unforgiving aspect of Din, what's called Dino Kashya, hard Din. Whereas Rivka Imenu was imbued with a chut shel chesed, a streak of kindness, representing the more lenient, forgiving aspect, right? Or what's called dina rafya, a weaker kind of din. This enabled her to soften and mitigate Yitzchak's harsh form of din. And as Isaiah says, if not for the fact that she was lenient, the world would not be able to withstand the harsh din of Yitzchak. Yitzchak's form of din was too exacting. The world depended on Rivka to soften and kind of moderate it. So therefore the Zohar concludes, says, in this manner, HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranges marriages in the world. One tough, representing the harsh, that exacting sort of form of din, and one soft, representing the lenient form of din. In order to rectify everything by mitigating the force of din with chesed. So we have clear-cut evidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranges matches by pairing together two opposites in order to soften one's din with the other's chesed. That is what is meant by Eselai Ezer Kinegda. I'll make a helpmate who will stand against him. Now, it is quite clear that this notion presented by the Chasam Sofer regarding Yitzchak and Rivka agrees amazingly with the words of the Teferis Shlema, also on next week's Parsha. Eliezer chose Rivka as the suitable wife for Yitzchak because she performed acts of chesed. Therefore, she would be able to use her chesed to mitigate and balance out Yitzchak's midah din. This explains why Yitzchak's initial inclination was to give his brachas, to give his blessings to Esav, rather than upon Yaakov. Yaakov only received the brachas because Rivka sort of intervened and instructed Yaakov to approach his father in a kind of a devious manner. And he says as follows. He says beautiful words to explain this. He says, it is crucial that we have to examine Yitzchak Avinu's concerns for not wanting to bench Yaakov Avinu from the get-go. Yitzchak was afraid that the blessings of Olam Hazeh would distract Yaakov and have a negative effect upon him. In keeping with the words of the Pasuk in the book of Devarim in Lamed Beis, says, Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat. Yeshurun became fat and kicked out. In other words, affluence causes people to become lax and even rebellious regarding the service of Hashem. It was only due to Rivka Imenu's wisdom and foresight that Yaakov received the brachas. She understood that the riches of this world can assist one in serving Hashem more completely. This applies as well to that which is written in this week's Pasha, right? Let it be that the maiden to whom I'm going to say, Kadi na kade, please tip your jug, right? So that will be the one that you have chosen for your servant, for Yitzchak. In other words, she will be the rebuke, the opposition to the midah of Yitzchak. It will be her task to elicit mercy and favor and goodwill. This idea is also quite clear in the words of the Sar Shalom of Bells, also addressing the pasuk in this week's parasha. It says that Rivka raised her eyes and she saw Yitzchak, and she let herself down from the camel, and she said to the slave, "Who is that man walking in the field towards us?" And the Eved said, "Hu Adoni, he is my master." She then took the veil and she covered herself. The difficulty here is that it is unbecoming and out of character for a righteous woman such as Rivka to inquire about a man walking in the field in this manner. Think about that for a second. We'll be back in a moment. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. Please stay with us. We're right in the middle of something very juicy.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh Pashas Chai Sora. As we get closer to the bewitching hour of running off and finishing all of our Shabbos preparations, we're talking about institutionally provided electricity on Shabbos. So we brought the two opinions. Lemaisa, sort of in practice, so the electricity may be used on Shabbos, even, let's say, in Eretz Yisrael, where it is controlled by Jews. And it's true that really, and they almost admit it, that the electric company could take measures before Shabbos to avoid some of the Chil Shabbos. Nevertheless, when the technicians do what is necessary to guarantee their electricity supply, they are not desecrating Shabbos, since electricity is necessary for people to live. Because of this, everyone may benefit from the electricity. Since the consumers do not benefit from the malachas performed by the electric company technicians for the sole purpose of saving money, and from their perspective, it would actually be better if the procedures were actually automated. They may benefit from the electricity on Shabbos, right? I think they're trying at least to automate the whole grid and try to do what they can to prevent Shabbos zones. Obviously, as I say here, it's not an issue since all the workers are non-Jews, and the population is a vast majority of non-Jews, and therefore, if there is a problem on the grid, if they do fix it, please God, they should. They're doing it primarily for the vast majority of the population, which is non-Jews, and therefore, clearly, they're not doing it for us, and we would be allowed, when the electricity goes on, obviously, with certain restrictions, to be able to use the restrictions are, of course, in terms of cooking and boiling, which is a separate discussion that we need to get to at some point. Anyway, that brings us to the end of our time together. Just have enough time to wish all of you an amazing, amazing Shabbos. Let it be beautiful. Let it be restful. Let it be inspiring. Let it be something that gives you the energy to get through, Be'ez Hashem, the next week. And thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for being part of our radio team. May we celebrate many, many good things together and learn much Torah, which of course elevates us and makes us into much greater and better people. To each one of us and the entire radio family, I wish a Shabbat Shalom, a good and beautiful Shabbos.